This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. It's Zoomer Radio's Theater of the Mind with Frank Proctor. Open your mind as we fill your head with amazing thrills, chills, and laughs. Theater of the Mind, the best love programs from radio's golden age, only on Zoomer Radio. Now, here is your master storyteller, Frank Proctor. It's Zoomer Radio's Theater of the Mind with Frank Proctor. Open your mind as we fill your head with amazing thrills, chills, and laughs. Theater of the Mind, the best love programs from radio's golden age, only on Zoomer Radio. Now, here is your master storyteller, Frank Proctor.
Thank you, and welcome to the show. X-1 was an American half-hour science fiction radio drama that was broadcast on NBC. It was known for high production values in adapting stories from leading American authors of the era. Some names you might recognize, Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury, to name a few. Let me take you to the mid-50s now, when people and sci-fi writers were looking skyward and wondering what was happening way out there and imagining what might happen.
Countdown for blastoff. X-minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X-minus 1, fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand would-be worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight's story, The Man in the Moon.
Attention, attention. This is the Federal Bureau of Missing Persons calling all local agencies. Attention, this is a coded report nationwide. Missing since 9 o'clock this morning, the following persons: Smigley Jonathan, 5 feet 8 inches tall, brown hair, brown eyes, mastoid scar behind right ear,
Hello.
Last seen wearing
Hello.
Blue top coat and
Hello.
Tan cap.
Hello,
wanted by Los Angeles.
Hello.
Hello, get off this wavelength.
Hello,
this is a restricted band.
Hello. Hello, Earth.
Whoever you are, you're on a coded
Hello,
wavelength.
Earth.
Tune out. This frequency is reserved
Hello.
For the Federal Bureau of Missing Persons.
Hello, Earth. This is the moon calling Earth. Hello, Earth.
This guy's loony.
This is Jake in transmission.
Jake, this is Charlie of the code room. Some crackpot is on our frequency.
Yeah, I heard him, Charlie. I've got CQ trying to trace the source now. We should have a triangulation any second.
Well, hurry it up, will you? Some ham is in for a good stiff fine by the FCC.
Yeah, they ought to take his license away. Oh, here comes Lenny with a directional fix.
Right.
Thanks, Lenny. Hey, what's this? This is impossible.
What's going on down there? How about it? Get that ham out of my kilocycles.
Now, listen, Charlie, unless this is a gag, that interference is being beamed from 240,000 miles away.
Oh, now, Jake, you know there ain't no such thing as 240,000 miles away.
Yes, there is, Charlie. Straight up.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Charlie, that signal is coming from the moon.
Are you nuts?
Well, somebody might be bouncing it like a radar signal.
Radar? On this frequency? Where'd you study basic radio?
Now, listen, Flathead, you asked for a fix. I gave the best fix our instruments can find. Take it or leave it. Somebody on the moon is calling the Bureau of Missing Persons.
Mr. Timken. Mr. Timken.
What's the sweat, Charlie? Shouldn't you be broadcasting?
Listen, Mr. Timken.
You know I'm a sober citizen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Never once have I broadcast with the smell of alcohol on my breath, right?
Right.
In all your 12 years here at the Bureau, did I once ever...
What's the matter, Charlie?
We're picking up a message on our wavelength.
Well, did you report to the FCC?
I ain't got the nerve.
Well, what's wrong?
You'll scream when you hear this, Mr. Timken. You'll jump right out the window, but... We are getting an SOS from the moon. Well, that's it. He started on voice and switched to Morse. The way the signal repeats sounds like a phonograph record or automatic sender of some sort.
Well, what's it say?
Let's see here. Can you read me? Help Otterburn. Will contact when moon is in phase.
Let's have that again.
Can you read me? Help Otterburn. Will contact when moon is in phase.
Otterburn.
That sounds like a name, huh?
Otterburn. Otterburn. Wait a minute.
Something registered?
Cornelius Otterburn. Holy jumping Jehoshaphat.
Hey, where are you going?
I talked to the chief.
Hey, wait a minute. What are you going to tell him? We just got a CQ from the man in the moon?
That's exactly what I am going to tell him, Charlie.
Hey. Oh, this is just too much for me.
Washington Star Ledger.
Let me have O'Brien on city desk.
A moment. O'Brien?
Seamus.
Yeah.
Charlie Starbuck down at the Missing Persons Bureau. You want a hot one? No kidding. This'll cost you a beer, okay?
All right, shoot, noodle brain. I'll stay on your wavelength for 30 seconds.
Okay. We just got a radio message from the moon.
Yep. What?
From the moon.
Call me back when you're sober.
Okay, Seamus, if you don't know a story when you see one,
I'll send you the name of a good psychiatrist. So long, Orson Welles.
How do you like that? You don't believe me.
Otterburn, Mr. Wade. Now, does that name ring a bell?
You're the man with the photographic memory, Henry. What about Otterburn?
Cornelius Otterburn, atomic physicist, reported missing from his home in Baltimore on June 5th, 1945, just 5 years ago, vanished completely.
Are you trying to tell me you really think there's something to this man in the moon business? Henry, I'm surprised at you. This is some crackpot trying to jam the airwaves.
Yes, but the name Otterburn is so unusual.
So are a lot of names.
But I have a theory that...
I was afraid of that. Henry, you always have a theory. Let's see, what was it last year? Oh, yes. That people disappear, an occupational psych.
Well, it's true.
Please, Henry, I'm a busy man. You expect me to believe that this Otterburn is sitting up on the moon, sending out shortwave messages?
Well, he might be on Earth, bouncing the messages off the moon. But who's to say he isn't on the moon?
Henry, as chief of this bureau, I have my hands full trying to coordinate reports from 48 states and Alaska. I have no time to include the moon.
But, Mr. Wade...
Out, Henry.
But, Mr. Wade...
Out, I'm busy.
Yes.
Oh, here. Take this folder of reports for the dead file.
Yes.
And no more nonsense, eh, Henry?
Yes.
I appreciate that you have a very dull job filing old missing persons reports, and I appreciate that you take an active interest in the affairs of the Bureau. But no more nonsense, huh?
No, sir. No more nonsense.
Pardon me.
Hmm?
You are Mr. Henry Timken.
That's my name.
Permit me, Jefferson Philo, scientific feature writer.
Well, how do you do? Oh, are you a newspaper man?
Not exactly. I write as a hobby. Occasionally, the papers give me leads on an assignment. If I may have a moment of your time.
Well, certainly. Just sit down at my desk over here.
Thank you. My, that's quite a stack of papers.
Filing. I'm the records custodian of the Bureau. 12 years and never misplaced a record.
Magnificent. I admire the precise mind, Mr.
Timken.
Of course. Now, Mr. Timken... Mr. O'Brien, the editor of the Star Ledger, said I might drop by and investigate a rumor. Only a rumor, mind you, that a message from the, moon?
Well, we aren't certain it's from the moon. It may be a bounce. They have bounced radar waves off the moon, you know.
Yes, and I know. I wrote the first newspaper article on it.
Really? I'd be interested to read it.
I must have a copy in my briefcase.
Well, don't bother.
Oh, but I insist. Oh, yes. There you are. I'll leave it on your desk.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now... About this message from the moon, Mr. Timken.
Well, now, we don't know for sure, as I said, but I believe that this message, wherever it originates, is from Cornelius Otterburn.
The physicist?
Oh, do you know him?
I once wrote an article on his contribution to nuclear mechanics. A brilliant man, Otterburn. Years ahead of his contemporaries.
Mm. Well, whoever is sending those signals, if he isn't on the moon, is at least using the moon as a sounding board, bouncing the signal.
But why, Mr. Timken, why?
Well, if you will come here tomorrow night at 8, Mr. Philo, we may learn the answer to that question. I've arranged with Charlie, our radio man, to let me use the equipment.
May I consider this an invitation?
You certainly may.
Very well, sir. Until tomorrow night, then.
Goodbye, Mr. Philo. Let's see now. Aiken, Abelard, Abramson, Rano, Atchison. That's funny. Now, where did this list of names come from? Paul Ahrens, astromathematician. Robert Simons, electronic engineer. Carl Parker, mining specialist. Well, this must have gotten mixed up with the papers on my desk by accident. Peculiar list of names. Oh, good morning, Charlie.
Hi, Mr. Timken. See, we made the papers.
Oh?
And how? And as the chief steamed up about it, he really gave me what for.
What did the papers say?
Oh, mostly ha-ha. Here's the Herald, listen. Man on the moon contacts missing persons bureau. Missing atomic scientists sitting on the moon, say bureau experts, et cetera, et cetera. What a panty.
Well, no wonder Mr. Wade is hopping.
Say, about tonight, Mr. Timken,
Now, you promised you'd give me a key to the radio room.
Yeah, but I didn't expect
it. I'll take full responsibility with Mr. Wade.
Not the time for the morning broadcast. We got quite a list today.
Well, mind if I listen a while? We may hear Otterburn.
Well, I ain't self-conscious. Just stick around.
Yes.
Attention. Attention. This is the Federal Missing Persons Bureau calling all local agencies. Nationwide. This is a coded broadcast. The following persons are missing. Ahrens, Dr. Paul,
what?
5'5", brown hair, brown eyes, scar on left side of chin, thick glasses.
Ahrens.
Occupation, astromathematician. Missing since 6 o'clock this morning. Being sought by Bel Air Police.
Charlie.
Repeat. Dr. Paul
Charlie,
Ahrens.
Turn it off a second.
Hold it. A delay, 1 minute. Listen, Mr. Timken, it's okay to stay, but you can't interrupt us.
This is important. Did you say Dr. Ahrens was reported missing this morning?
6 a.m. We got the report from Bel Air less than an hour ago.
Are you certain, Charlie?
Positive. What is this?
Charlie, what's the next name on the list?
Let's see. Simons, Robert, engineer.
What?
Came in less than 20 minutes ago.
20?
Hey, what's the matter with you? You look like you've seen a ghost.
It's nothing, Charlie, except that last night, quite by accident, someone left a list of names on my desk, and that list included the names of those two men who were reported missing within the last hour.
What? Oh, that don't sound right to me.
Well, it isn't right, Charlie. It leaves a big question to be answered. Who would make up a list of missing persons before they were missing, not after?
And you say this list of names was left on your desk accidentally?
Well, I believe so, Mr. Wade.
You have any ideas, Henry?
It's hard to say. Mr. Philo left some papers from his briefcase.
Mr. Philo?
Well, a science feature writer.
I see. You were the leak on that story, then?
Yes, sir, I'm afraid I was. I didn't think it would be treated as a laughing matter.
Well, we'll deal with that later.
Yes, sir.
What's this Philo like?
Well, he's a strange old duck. Bald, thick glasses, tall. He walks stooped over. Seems to know a great deal about scientific data, but, of course, being a science writer,
Is there any other possibility?
I believe that this is all hooked up with the broadcast from Otterburn.
That seems to be a very remote possibility.
The Missing Persons Bureau deals in remote possibilities, Mr. Wade.
I do not require a statement of policy.
Yes, sir.
What's the theory?
For some time now, it has been my contention that in a country like ours, where even the cleverest criminal can be ferreted out and located eventually, there is no such thing as a missing person.
I was afraid of that.
Now, for 12 years now, I have kept the central files, where information from all over the country is channeled and recorded. I have made a private study.
This is beginning to sound familiar, Henry.
And I have discovered that each year, literally thousands of persons vanish, leaving no trace. They are never located. Where do they go? Nobody knows. And they disappear in interesting cycles.
What sort of cycles?
Occupations, for example. One year we'll have a run on, well, say, coal miners. Next year the proportion of engineers increases. And then scientists. And
what do you think happens, Henry?
I don't know, Mr. Wade, but I'm beginning to suspect that somebody else has discovered the same phenomenon, even to the point, perhaps, of being able to predict who will turn up among the missing next.
Philo?
Well, I don't know. But I would like to find out.
And you think Otterburn may be a part of this picture?
Mr. Wade, I definitely do.
Henry, do you honestly expect me to buy an idea like that?
It is more than an idea. The two top men on this list are missing, and...
Maybe
and,
so, but the rest of them aren't. Parker, Watson, Gibbs. Why, I saw Parker in the restaurant where I had lunch today.
Yes, but...
And if you think I'm going to make myself a laughingstock by accepting such a cracked brain theory...
Well, I...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Hello, Wade speaking. Yes? Hmm? I see. What name? Just a minute. Henry, let me see that list again.
Here you are, sir.
Go ahead. I see. I'll get back to you. I guess I owe you an apology, Henry.
Sir?
Carl Parker was just reported missing.
Parker?
Third man on your list.
Holy mackerel.
Exactly. Henry, for a good many years now, I've ridiculed these theories of yours. I don't know. Perhaps I've underestimated you. Maybe this time you've really stumbled onto something.
What do you intend to do, Mr. Wade?
I don't know. I haven't thought it out yet.
I was planning to listen for another broadcast tonight in the hope that Otterburn might try to contact us again.
Good idea. I believe I'll join you.
I also invited Mr. Philo, the feature writer.
Oh? I'll be glad to meet him. I'm beginning to get interested in you, Mr. Philo.
Wait, you don't think...
That he's mixed up in this?
Yes, sir.
I don't know, Henry. It suddenly strikes me that we don't know very much about him, really.
He ought to contact the police.
No, Henry. I think we're better off keeping this between ourselves for the moment. We're dealing with the unknown. And in solving an equation for the X factor, it's often easier to limit the number of terms. Follow me?
We don't know, Mr. Wade.
There may be more danger in what you have discovered than you are aware of. Let's keep it quiet. You agree?
Maybe you're right, Mr. Wade. I haven't thought of the danger involved.
My friend Mr. Filer was late.
Well, he said he'd be here. He strikes me as a man who keeps appointments.
Look out the window.
Yes.
The moon is almost in direct phase. Can't wait much longer.
Well, it's a perfectly clear night for transmission. If anybody's sending, we ought to pick it up with this equipment.
We'd better switch on the set.
Yes. I never realized how eerie this office could be when it was empty.
I left a light in the hall for Mr. Filer when he comes. Are you getting anything?
Just some foreign stuff, I think.
The British portion of tonight's programming from Johannesburg, South Africa. We continue in April.
That's a peculiar transmission sound.
Earth.
Well, that sounds like something. See if I can work the selector.
The moon is in phase.
Yes.
Hello. Earth. Can you hear me?
I'll try to return. Hello? Hello?
Hello. Earth.
Hello. Do you hear me?
Oh, I get you now. Thank God.
Who are you? Can you hear me? Who are you?
This is Professor Cornelius Otterburn. Hello?
Go on. I hear you.
Not much time. They're on to me. They've located my sending point. Do you hear me?
Go ahead. Keep talking.
I've only enough oxygen for a few minutes more.
Well, where are you?
I'm on the Earth side of the moon. You get that? The Earth side of the moon. A volcanic crater.
Good. Start that recorder, Mr. Wade. Go on. Explain, please. Explain, please.
Listen closely. There is an Earth colony on the moon. There is an Earth colony on the far side of the moon, made up of renegade scientists and criminals. Professor Ernst Halsman...
He died in an insane asylum in 1938.
Professor Ernst Halsman discovered nuclear rocket power in 1935, turned his plans over to escaped inmates of the asylum... They took off and set up a colony on the far side of the moon in 1938.
Go ahead, we're recording you.
Each year, they recruit new colonists from Earth. Slave labor, mostly. I was kidnapped in 1945.
Yes, I know. Keep talking.
They wanted me to work on atomic drive for their flying disc.
Still getting you. Go on.
Last month, six others and I escaped.
Now speak louder.
You got to stop them. Stop them.
Stop who?
The moon colony. Planning to take over the Earth. Invasion.
Hang on.
No oxygen. Hard to breathe. Listen. They have agents on Earth. You hear me?
Agents on Earth? Where? Who? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Agents can...
Henry, look out. Lights. Someone at the window, get down. Henry, are you all right?
I think so. This shot smashed the transmitter.
And the lights. Strike a match. Careful.
He was close.
I got a look at him. From the description, it was your Mr. Philo.
We got a recording anyway, but not the most important part of the message. Poor Otterburn, suffocating to death.
Henry, we've got to get you out of here. He said they have agents. Philo was probably one of them. He'll be looking for you now, trying to kill you.
The police...
You think the police would believe a fantastic story like this? People being kidnapped to the moon as slave labor? Moon colony planning an invasion of the Earth?
But
Henry, believe me, they'd trap us into straitjackets before we could finish.
Well, we've got to do something.
We need time. Time to get proof.
You don't think my theory was bunk then?
I know it wasn't, Henry. Right now, my only concern is for your safety.
But we can't walk out of here. Philo's probably waiting.
Listen, there's a service elevator that leads to the basement garage.
Yeah?
We can get down there. There are some delivery trucks parked there all night. We can probably get one started. The garage door's off the ramp, work from the inside. We'll start the mechanism and make a run for it.
I don't know. I think if we call the police...
By the time the police get here, we'll be dead. You think Philo will wait outside all night? Come on. That's an order.
Okay. But what about the recording of Otterburn's notes?
We'll leave that here in the safe in my office. They'll never get into that. Let's go. You buzz the elevator while I hide the recording. This is the basement. Come on. Keep to the side.
Yes, sir.
Shh. Let's try that delivery truck over there. I'll get in. All right, Henry. You start the mechanism to open the garage door, then jump onto the truck.
Yes, sir.
We'll make a dash for it.
Where can we go?
I have a farm outside Chevy Chase. It's private. Miles from the nearest neighbor and completely hidden by trees. We'll run for that. Go ahead. Start the door up.
All right.
Jump in. Let it go, Henry. Cross your fingers. We made it out all right. Anything doing?
There's a blue coupe behind us, Mr. Wade. It's easily following.
I'll cut up Pennsylvania Avenue. Now Route 1, toward Baltimore.
It is following. He turned with us. Can you go faster?
Not much faster.
Well, he's gaining on us.
I've got an idea. Hang on, Henry.
Yes. Why'd you stop?
I'll turn off the lights. It worked. He shot right past us. Now we'll double back and go out another route.
I don't see anything. I think we've lost him.
Good. I think everything's going to be all right now. We can be at my farm in less than an hour. Not much longer now. Is anyone behind us?
I thought I saw the blue coupe again, but I was mistaken. Whew. This place is really hot in the wilderness.
You could stay here indefinitely till we'll figure out the next move. We're just up this dirt road now. There's the house up ahead.
You're not going toward it.
No, I have a better idea. There's a big abandoned wheat silo on my grounds. It's down a hollow where it can't be seen except in the air. And even then, the oak trees shield it. We'll hide you out there. Now, we leave the truck here. You'll never be seen. Come on.
Yes. How did you ever find this place, Mr. Wade?
I've always liked seclusion. I bought it about 12 years ago. Come up here in the summertime to get away from it all. There's the silo.
It's certainly well hidden.
There's a small door around the side. Come on. Be careful of those bushes.
Yes.
It's hard to see them in the dark.
Do you suppose Philo will find us?
I assure you, Henry, Mr. Philo will never find us here. Not in a million years. Here's the door.
It's pitch dark.
Oh, my arm. I know the way. Just a few steps up and another door.
Steel. This is an unusual silo. It's double walled, wood outside and steel inside.
Completely fireproof. An army couldn't wreck it. We're inside the inner shell. Careful. Yes. We're in a circular room. Stay here a moment. I'll go outside and see if the coast is clear. In a moment, your eyes will become accustomed to the darkness. I'll bring back some food and water.
Don't be long, Mr. Wade. This place gives me the willies.
Just a moment.
Mr. Wade. I swear I hear something. Mr. Wade. What's that? There is something. Good Lord. There's someone in here. It's locked. Oh, no. Mr. Wade! Mr. Wade, let me out! I'm not alone in here! Mr. Wade! This must be a light switch. Thank God. Oh, no. People. In 15, 20. Mr. Wade, help! Help!
It will do you no good to shout, Henry.
Mr. Wade, where are you?
Outside. Speaking over the intercom.
Mr. Wade, there are people in here. 15 or 20 of them. They're sitting like statues, just staring at me.
They won't hurt you, Henry. Huh? They've all been drugged. They're even more helpless than you.
But who are they?
Permit me to introduce them, Henry, since they're currently unable to introduce themselves. The gentleman seated before you, the one with the scar, is Dr. Paul Ahrens, the astro-mathematician. Next to him is Mr. Robert Simons, electronic engineer.
Names on the list.
Yes, you're familiar with the rest. They've all been, recruited. We work with Professor Halsman's group on the moon.
Moon? Then you're one of them.
Of course. Oh, yes. There's one whose name was not on our list. If you'll turn around, Henry, you'll recognize the drugged form of your old friend, Mr. Philo.
Philo? But I thought...
That he was part of the conspiracy? No. Contrary. His snooping made it necessary for us to include
him. Yes, but the man in the window, the one who fired the shot.
An agent of mine. The pilot of this ship.
Ship? What ship?
This silo is camouflaged for a rocket launching platform. In a moment, the roof will slide back for the rocket's takeoff.
A rocket ship?
In exactly 70 hours, you and your companions will join Professor Otterburn on the moon.
But you can't do this to me.
We have done it,
No!
You see, there was another name omitted in that list, which I carelessly mixed up with your papers. That of Henry Timken.
No!
Bon voyage.
I won't let you do this! You can't! Please, let me out! Let me out, please! This can't happen! Let me out! Let me out!
Since 8 o'clock last night, the following persons: Timken Henry, age 45, height 5 feet 8, 165 pounds, brown eyes, slightly balding, occupation records custodian. Repeat, Timken Henry, age 45, height 5 feet 8, 165 pounds.
In just a moment, a word about next week's adventure. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Man in the Moon, an original radio drama written by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Louis Van Ruten as Henry, Santos Ortega as the Chief, Ross Martin as Charlie, Sidney Smith as Otterburn, Bob Haig as Jake, Joe DeSantis as Philo, and Ed Latimer as O'Brien. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Time now for Phil Harris and Alice Faye. The comedy radio program ran on NBC from 1948 to 1954 and evolved from an earlier music and comedy variety program, the Fitch Bandwagon. Singer-bandleader Phil Harris and his wife, actress-singer Alice Faye, became the early show's breakout stars, and the show was retooled into a full situation comedy with Harris and Faye playing fictionalized versions of themselves as a working show business couple raising two daughters in a slightly madcap home. Well, that madcap description certainly applies to tonight's episode called Red Paint on the Poodle.
Good health to all from Rexall. It's the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists.
Good evening and aloha nui. Tonight, the makers of Rexall drug products and the 10,000 independent family druggists who recommend and sell them salute station KGU Honolulu and welcome you to the NBC network carrying the Harris Faye Show. Through the facilities of KGU, we extend greetings to all our friends on the islands and especially to the firm of Benson Smith who have been Rexall druggists for the past 40 years. We landlubbers here on the mainland tell you in all sincerity that we're happy you've invited us aboard, and we hope that you'll become regular members of our listening audience. But wait, I'm sure the stars of our show can tell you much better than I just how we all feel. So here's Alice Faye and Phil Harris.
Phil, isn't it wonderful? Now we can be heard in the Hawaiian Islands.
You bet it's wonderful, honey. When I think of all those lovely people way out there in the Mediterranean that...
Phil... The Hawaiian Islands are in the Pacific.
When I think of all those lovely people way out there in the Pacific listening to our program, I just want to sing.
Well, don't. This is no time for corn.
All right, Smarty, what can I do?
Why, tell our listeners in Hawaii how happy we are to have them with us every Sunday from now on.
Okay. Folks, we're just bowled over that you're going to be with us every Sunday from now on.
And that we'll do our very best to please them.
We'll do our very best to please you.
And that we'd love to have their letters and comments.
And we'd love to have your letters and compliments.
Phil!
Now can I sing?
What? That's what I like about the South?
Think you're smart, don't you? Well, this time I'm going to sing That's What I Like About the South Pacific.
Oh, no you don't. We want Hawaii to keep listening.
Aloha to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall Family Druggist brings you the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. Mr. Scott of Rexall and his wife are going on a motor trip for a few days. However, they have a very valuable French poodle named Madame Bovary, whom they would like to leave in good hands while they're gone. As we look in, we find Mr. Scott on the phone asking Phil if he'll take care of the dog while they're away.
What's that, Mr. Scott? Mr. Scott, we seem to have a bad connection. What did you say?
I said, I'm taking Mrs. Scott on a motor trip for a few days, and I'd like to leave Madame Bovary with you while I'm gone.
Madame Bovary? Gee, Mr. Scott, I'd like to help you out, but I'm a married man. Gee, whiz, Alice is a little touchy about having other women around the house. I ain't
Harris,
gonna...
Harris, Madame Bovary is a dog.
Oh, well, in that case, leave her with Remley. He don't care what they look like.
Give me strength. Look, Cornball. Madame Bovary is a dog. You know, bow wow, woof woof, arf arf.
Oh, Scotty, you've been working too hard.
Harris, listen closely. I'll spell it for you. I want to leave a D-O... No, that'll get him more confused than... Wait, I've got it. Mr. Harris, when your wife is mad at you, where does she put you?
In a doghouse.
Cut it in half and you've got it. That's what I want to leave with you. A dog.
Well, why didn't you say so instead of getting me involved in one of them double in tandem routines? don't know nothing about what you're talking about. We'd be glad to take care of her. A nice dog, bring her over.
Thanks. I'll be right over with her. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Scott.
Who called, Phil?
Oh, it's Mr. Scott, honey. He's taking his wife on a motor trip, and he wants to leave his dog with us.
Oh, that'll be nice for the children, having a dog around.
Yeah. Well, if that Scotty's coming over with that dog, I won't be able to finish painting this chair right now.
You better put the paint away now.
I'll put the paint can away later.
You know, Phil, we should have bought the girls a dog for Christmas. Frankie promised them one, but instead he gave them that horrible, uncouth gift.
Hold it, Mercedes. What's uncouth about a pool table?
Well, I don't want it in the house, and I'm going to tell Frankie. So where is he?
He's in the den with the kids. Said he was going to help them with their homework. I'll call him. Hey, Remley, come in here a minute, will you?
All right, Curly, I'll be right with you.
Okay, Phyllis, it's your shot. Try the sixth ball in the side pocket, and this time don't cheat. Keep one foot on the floor. Now remember, you each owe me $3 so far.
When we started, you said we were playing for fun.
Well, that was before I was sure I could beat you. Okay, now stop stalling and chalk up.
All right. Uncle Frankie, how do I make this shot?
That's a cinch. Put a little English on the cue ball, kiss her off the seven, bank it off the corner cushion, you get it right in the side pocket. It's an impossible shot. She'll never make it.
Well, I'll try. Here goes.
Little wise guy.
Well, Phyllis and I won that game. Now it's your turn to pay up.
All right. Here's 50 cents in play money.
I don't forget it, Uncle Frankie. When we win, you pay us in play money. But when you win, we have to pay you in real money. How come?
Fortunes of war, my child. Now, if you kids will excuse me, I'll go see what your daddy wants. Curly? Hey, do you want to see me, Curly?
I want to see you, Frankie. It's about the pool table.
Uh-oh, hold it a minute. That must be Mr. and Mrs. Scott.
What are the Scotts coming here for?
They're going away on a trip and they're stopping by for a minute. Excuse us, Frankie.
Yeah.
Hello, Harris. Mrs. Harris.
Oh, hello, Mr. Scott. Come right on in.
Where's Mrs. Scott?
She's at home. I'm picking her up later. Well, here's Madame Bovary.
Hiya, Fuchi. She's a cute little thing.
Hey, Curly, does the old test tube leave yet? Oh, hi, Scotty.
Oh, it's him. Hello, Remley. Good to see you.
Thanks. Good to see you, too. You're looking fine, Mr. Scott. Well, Mrs. Scott. You're looking your usual charming self. Nice to see you again. She's got a cold, eh?
Remley, one more nasty...
Oh, no, just a mistake, Mr. Scott. Frankie can't see too well. He's wearing his nearsighted head today.
Look, Frankie, this is a dog. It isn't Mrs. Scott.
Harris, I hardly think the identification is necessary. As for you, Remley, this is the beginning of a new year. So why don't you get it off to a good start by doing away with yourself? Now, Mrs. Harris, I have to be running along now.
Oh, I'll see you to the door, Mr. Scott.
All right, so long, Scotty. Come on, Frankie, let's take this dog in and show it to the kids, huh?
By the way, Mrs. Harris, I want to leave this dog whistle with you.
Yes.
Incidentally, don't think the whistle's broken when you blow it, because you won't hear it, but the dog will.
Oh, Mr. Scott, you've been standing too close to Frankie.
I know I sound like him, but this is a supersonic whistle, and it's too high-pitched for the human ear, but a dog can hear it plainly. Oh, by the way, Mrs. Harris, yes. I won't be here for the program Sunday, but I'll try to listen in. I'd hate to miss your song.
I'd hate to have you miss it, too, and just to make sure you don't, I'll sing it now.
Bye-bye, baby. Remember, you're my baby. When they give you the eye and
just to show that I care, I will write and declare that I'm on the loose, but I'll stay on the square. I'll be lonely, but even though I'm lonely, there'll be no other guy. So I'll be gone for a while. I know I'll be smiling with my baby by and by. Still on the square.
I'll be lonely, but send that rainbow to me, then my shadows will fly. Though you'll be gone for a while, I know that I'll be smiling with my baby by and by.
How do you like that? He drove off right in the middle of my song. Oh, well, as long as he sends the check every week, who cares? I'd better put this dog whistle in a safe place. I wonder if it really works. I gotta try it. Dog heard it, but I didn't. Mr. Scott was right. It can't be heard by a human being. I'd better put it on the mantel so I'll know where it is. Well, it's 11:45. I'd better prepare lunch.
Hey, Alice, where are those instructions that Mr. Scott gave you? I think this dog... Alice! Ah, well, I'll find them myself. I think she put them up on the mantle. Hey, I never saw this whistle before. Must belong to the kids. I wonder what it sounds like. Must be broken. Maybe you have to blow it harder. Who's blowing that darn whistle in here? Well, I'm blowing it, but... You heard it blow?
Yeah. That's the shrillest sound I ever heard in my life.
But Frankie, the whistle's broken. Look, I'll show you.
Stop it! You want to break my eardrums?
But I didn't hear nothing. I... Frankie. My ears ain't working. I must be losing my hearing.
Nah, it's nothing serious. Some people are nearsighted. You just happen to be near-eared.
This is no time for jokes.
Lunch is ready.
Hey! Oh, honey. I got awful news for you. From now on, when you whisper sweet nothings in my ear, that's what it's gonna be. Nothing.
Phil, what are you talking about?
I'm losing my hearing, honey. I've been blowing this whistle and I don't hear a sound.
Of course you don't. It's a supersonic whistle. It can't be heard by human beings. Only by dogs.
Oh, well, thank goodness I'm all right. I didn't hear it, and Remley said he heard... Remley.
What are you staring at me for? Just because I heard the whistle doesn't mean that I...
Hey, surely if only dogs can hear it and I heard it, it must mean that I...
Take it easy. Take down, Rex.
Frankie carrying on so?
Alice, I got something amazing to tell you. When I blew this dog whistle, Frankie heard it.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Honey, don't you understand? What did you say about the whistle?
I said a human being can't hear it.
But Frankie heard it.
So?
What do you mean, so? This is awful. If I can hear like a dog, there must be something wrong with me.
Maybe you're part Airedale.
Don't be a funny man, part Airedale. I'll have you know I'm just as human as anybody.
I'll be right in, dear.
No!
Take it easy, Remley. Take it easy. Just quiet down a minute now. Take it easy. You're nervous. I'll soothe your nerves by singing something appropriate for a man in your condition.
Oh.
How about trees? Hold it. Wait a minute. Come to think of it, I got just the tune for you, Remley. Now sit back on your haunches, cock your ears, and listen to your master's voice.
I recommend to every one of you who continue to do the things you do, apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. Stand on a basic, firm philosophy, do it naturally, like it ought to be, apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. When old man trouble starts in hounding your doorstep, and he's got his grip around you, brother, that's the time you'd better watch your step. Consequently, I recommend you take this interview and apply it to everything you do, and you will find your knowledge more than any college could do for you. 'Cause it's only elemental to apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. Recommend to every one of you who continue to do the things you do, apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. Stand on a basic, firm philosophy, do it naturally, like it ought to be, apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. When old man trouble starts in hounding your doorstep, and he's got his grip around you, brother, that's the time you better get mohair. Consequential, I beg you take this little interview and apply it to everything you do, and you will find your knowledge is more than any college could do for you. 'Cause it's only elemental to apply the fundamental and let the incidental go by. Bye-bye. F-U-N-D, I don't know how to spell it, but let the incidental go by.
Now I know what's wrong with my ears, Curly. I always stand too close to you when you sing. Hey, Curly, do you think maybe there's something in my ear that's causing my strange affliction?
Could be.
Maybe you got a tick in there.
Hey, hold still, Remley. I'll look in your ear and see. All over here.
Hmm. Kind of dark in there.
Wait till I light a match. Let me see now.
Hey, don't hold a match so close to my ear.
Will you hold still? I want to study this.
Right.
Anybody? Well, it's about time somebody set fire to Mr. Remley. No alcohol in him, he'd make a beautiful blaze.
You keep quiet. quiet, Julius. Now hold still, Frankie.
Sure. Hmm. I don't see nothing in your left ear, Remley.
Well, come over here and look in his right ear. I see something astounding in here.
What do you see?
The light shining through from his left ear.
Julius, you can see the light shining through... Julius, you mean...
Like an empty attic. Come here and look, Mr. Harris. Ooh, ooh. Well, that frightened me.
What frightened you?
A bat just flew out of me.
Julius, one more crack out of you and I'll spill this can of paint over you.
Get your shirt on. What are you looking at his ear for anyway, Mr. Harris?
Well, kid, Mr. Remley has a very strange affliction. You see, he hears like a dog.
Hey, this guy's a regular menagerie.
What do you mean, menagerie?
He hears like a dog, eats like a pig, and drinks like a fish. Mr. Harris, does any other member of his family suffer from this? Does he have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, he's one of a litter of five. Let's see, there was Prince, King, Rover...
Mr. Lindley, please don't bark while us humans is talking.
That does it. You're getting this paint can right on your head.
You missed me.
Oh, Remley, look what you got now. You got that red paint all over the dog. How am I going to explain this to Mr. Scott? How his dog got red?
Tell him his friend Poodle joined the Communist Party.
Lovely kid.
Yeah.
He's a grand boy. He's got all the charm of an old man's knee. Oh, Remley, now look. Just take a look at that dog. He's covered with red paint. What are we going to do? If Scotty ever sees his dog like this, I'm a cinch to lose my job. Now, we got to get the paint off of her hair.
Well,
look
take
at that.
It easy, will you? We'll get it off.
Oh, sure.
All we have to do is... You go answer the phone. I'll get
the paint off of the dog.
Let's see. Where does Curly keep his electric razor? Okay, stop shivering, Pooch. There you are. Hey, you look great, kid. Not a hair on
you.
Hey,
Remley, I got news for you. We're cooked. That was Mr. Scott on the phone. He had to postpone his trip, and he's coming over to get his... Remley, where'd you get that plucked chicken?
That's Scotty's dog. I shaved all her hair off.
Oh, no. Oh, a nude French poodle? Somehow she looks indecent. Throw a rug or a kimono or something over her.
I think she looks very attractive.
Only to you, Ren Pin Pin. Oh, Frankie, if Scotty sees his dog like this, he's going to raise the roof. Her fancy hairdo is the most important part of a dog.
I know that, and when Scotty gets here, she'll have hair. Hand me that bottle of glue.
You mean you're going to paste the hair back on the dog?
Oh, Curly, don't get hokey. Besides, there's paint on the old hair. I'm going to paste this on. Looks like poodle hair, but it's much more luxurious.
Yeah, it is. What is that?
Alice's Persian lamb muff. I know what I'm doing every minute.
Frankie. Will you listen to me? You can't do that.
It's too late. It's already cut, measured, and ready to fit. Now hold the dog still while I paste it on.
Oh, Remley, why do you always get... Well, that's all we got left to do now, and I'll tell you something. We got to hurry, Frankie. Mr. Scott will be here any minute. Now, look, do you remember how her fancy hairdo looked?
Stop worrying, will you? I'll put it on just the way it was.
You'd better.
Well, she's all pasted, Curly. How does she look?
I don't know, Frankie.
Didn't she have a tuft of hair on top of her head?
No. It was under her chin, just the way I got it.
Well, maybe you're right.
Hmm?
But is it supposed to be shaped like a Van Dyke? She looks like an ad for Boss Bear.
I think she looks swell. Notice how deftly I applied these clumps of fur here and there. Gives her a look of studied carelessness.
Well, maybe she looks all right, but wait a minute.
Hmm?
What's that limp strip of fur hanging down the back of her?
Oh, that's her new tail.
New tail?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to her old one?
Well, while I was working on her, she kept swishing it in my face, so I glued it to her stomach.
Frankie, this is a sad-looking animal, and I know that Scotty is going to be...
Mrs. Harris told me you had my beautiful dog in here. And I...
What is that horrible monstrosity?
That horrible monstrosity is your beautiful dog.
What happened to her? She used to have hair on top of her head and all along the top of her shoulders. Now she has it hanging from her chin and under her stomach.
Turn her upside down. She'll be as good as new.
I should have known better than to leave her here with you two maniacs. Come, Madam Bovary, we're going home. Daddy will pick you up. I can't budge her.
Remley, you put too much glue on her stomach and she's stuck to the floor. Pull a little harder, Scotty.
Oh, you poor dog. But don't worry. We'll get back at those two right now.
Now, wait a minute, Scotty. Wait a minute. Take it easy. Don't stick that dog on that.
Dog, nothing. I'm going to bite you myself.
Oh, wait. Don't roll yourself. I can explain. I didn't mean to. Scotty, stop chewing on my leg.
Take off your guard, you coward. Oh.
Friends, this is Phil Harris, and right now, I'm going to tell you about something that is very close to me. Somewhere is a youngster who needs a pal, a boy who may be fatherless or just an unhappy, unfortunate kid. Whatever the reason, the big brothers of America are ready to help, and you can help too if you're a big brother. Beginning next Sunday is National Big Brother Week. Give your own heart a warm feeling by joining up, won't you? Write Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia 3, Pennsylvania. Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia 3, Pennsylvania. Do that. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. This program was produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast were Gail Gordon and Stan Freeberg. Frank Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley.
And now for Phil and Alice and all the gang, and for the Rexall Drug Company and your Rexall family druggist, this is Bill Foreman saying aloha to all from Rexall.
Thank you for listening. I hope you'll be with me next week when I uncover more gems from the golden age of radio. Thanks to Joel Schoenwell and Paul Stringer for technical support. The executive producer for Theater of the Mind is Moses Neimer. I'm Frank Proctor. Have a wonderful weekend.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.